Hey, everybody, if you are watching this episode, then you will notice that I am not in my home office. I am actually traveling. This is the first podcast I've been able to record from the Myers facility in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have a mini Yoda in Minnesota. Oh, man, that was the worst. That was so bad. I'm sorry I subjected you to that. But I am in Mario Rodriguez's office. And Mario is a great person. He's our VP of information technology here at Myers. Anyways, Mario is not on the podcast. I'm just here recording it. And I'm going to be joined by Brandy Parker. Brandy is the founder and is a wonderfully amazing consultant over at Parker Brands. She was on an early episode with Ted Tate. If you want to, you can go back and you can check that one out. It was an awesome episode. So much has transpired in Brandy's life, and we are going to get to it after we hear a little bit from our amazing and wonderful sponsors, SpecRite and Myers.
SpecRite allows us to centralize our spec data in an easy-to-use and searchable platform, puts everyone on the same page with up-to-date information, and helps us to adapt quickly to business needs and sustainability reporting.
Today's podcast is also brought to you by Myers, which is where I work my day job and coincidentally is the most sustainable printing company in the country. Myers is a third generation family business on a mission to create a sustainable future for people, products, and our planet. To learn more, click the link down below in the show notes.
And for the first time in, I will never sing again. Actually, I'm not going to sing anymore. But I was going to say, for the first time, I've actually played that ad and I'm in the building where the big solar array M is on the top of the, that was kind of fun. I was like, oh, I'm there.
That's marvelous.
It's marvelous. And Brandy, you are joining me live from the woods, the sticks of Arkansas. Is that
absolutely correct. It's the sticks in the swamp. So South Arkansas is nice and swampy. Okay. But there's a lot of forest land too. So you nailed it.
Okay. Good to know. I learned, and apparently this was something that my family has always known, but I never knew it until I was in my 40s, that my mom spent some of her childhood in Arkansas I had an outhouse and it was very remote and way off the grid. And, it was actually the sticks. And, After Dr. King was assassinated, and is it James Earl Ray? James Earl Ray was fleeing the cops. He tried to hide. Like, my mom met him. He was trying to hide in their house, and they recognized him from like a Time magazine story or something crazy like that. I was like, how did I never know this? This seems like.
That's an incredible story, my friend. So whereabouts was she? Was she on the east? On the eastern side, then? On the eastern side?
I don't know. My mom had a pretty like transient childhood growing up. She grew up in many different places, and she has an incredible story, to be honest. I should probably have her on the podcast sometime.
I mean, I would definitely tune into that podcast. She sounds awesome.
Yeah, she's an incredible woman. Shout out to Lydia. She listens to all the episodes. At least she tells me she does. I used to joke that she would, you know, VPN in from all the countries, because I'm like, why is somebody listening to this and in Burundi? It's got to be my mom, just like got a VPN, like, I'm gonna help out Adam.
I'm just gonna go over here to this other country virtually.
Yeah. All right, so Brandy, thank you so much for joining, rejoining the podcast. But I didn't have the pleasure of interviewing you the first time, and I believe that was when you were at Pearl Fisher. Is this
correct? It was back in the day. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what year it was, but that's probably futile.
It was probably 2018, 2019, but anything prior to 2020 is like, it may have been the 1960s. Like, I don't even remember being born. It's just like, it's a fake life that happened.
it was the other dimension, and then we skipped dimensions when the pandemic came through. Yeah, and then we were on this parallel Earth that's hurtling towards its destruction in 2050. I'm just kidding. I'm not a doomsayer. I just thought I would throw that in.
No. I appreciate it because, you know, it could, it's actually one of my contentions with, on LinkedIn. I've been on a bit of a rant around aluminum packaging, claiming that it's infinitely recyclable. Cause I'm like infinitely, mm-hmm. I don't even think that our earth is infinitely going to exist. Like, but you're claiming that your aluminum cans will still be here. Like it's recyclable a lot of many times, thousands, maybe even millions. I don't know, but infinitely recyclable feels a little bit like, come on guys.
Well, you know, I think it's a really clever way of saying it doesn't degrade.
Sure. But that exact aluminum can will experience degradation in recycling because there's always going to be some sort of loss when you're recycling something, right? So the actual material itself, aluminum, is able to be recycled, but you know, there's liners in the can that, you know, stuff's going to get lost. It's 100% of that can is not 100% infinitely recyclable. That's my point. And that's what people think. And I'm like, it's clever marketing. It just bothers me. And I love aluminum. I think, you know, shout out to Crown and Ball and all the aluminum folks out there. You do a great job, but that's one thing that bothers me. I don't know.
That's interesting that it bothers you. Because the aluminum element itself is not degrading, but you're right. The liner, which is not made of aluminum, the ink, which is not made of aluminum, all that stuff is going away. So you are losing that mass, but the core of the can, the aluminum, there's no loss.
But it doesn't all get turned back into aluminum though. There's loss in a mechanical recycling process, right? Mm-hmm. Like the aluminum is not going to, we can't capture 100% of the aluminum because maybe a small little sliver of it gets lost in the, it gets stuck somewhere or it ends up in the trash or it ends up in a landfill or it ends up in the, like, I don't know.
That's super valid. But you know what? Compared to the other materials you could possibly mechanically recycle, the recovery rate is
infinitely
better.
Stop it. Stop it. Jeez. Now you're going to get me all sorts of stuff. I don't. Oh, wait. I do. By the by, this little Yeti mug is like a 10-ounce Yeti mug that I bought at a Yeti store in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I've never been able to find another one online in any place.
Like that particular size?
This size, a small little travel coffee mug. We've covered everything actually that I had on my list.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Dr. King's assassination, aluminum can recycling.
Outhouses in Arkansas.
Outhouses in Arkansas and Yeti coffee cups. So we'll probably wrap it up.
Yeah. I mean, I waited a long time to be on your podcast just to talk about those things.
Okay. Let's talk about the things that really matter, Brandy. who are you and why are you so awesome?
Who am I? That's a great question. I'm still figuring that out.
Me too.
And then here comes the imposter syndrome. Why am I so awesome? I don't know. The jury's out on that. But I know that. I'm trying and I know that I am following my passions and that's just about what I can say. Right. So embarking on this sustainability journey, has been a colorful winding path that started actually in the 90s.
Let's go in the Wayback Machine. We have,
let's pop into there because the 90s is when the best music was happening across the board.
Totally. Where did you fall? Where did you fall in the 90s musical genre? Was it because there was like the grunge rock?
Yeah.
Sort of like the alt rock. There was like I was into rap and hip hop. Where did you land in the 90s?
I was all of it.
Okay.
So my very first CD I ever bought was the New Jack City soundtrack.
Okay, perfect.
And then I moved from all of the hip hop into grunge. Grunge was then my thing. So it was like the whole spectrum. Anybody that was doing something innovative at the time, and hip hop was extremely innovative at that time. Rock was extremely innovative at that time. So it was just, I was in high school. So it was like a brilliant time. And it was another time when sort of talk about the environment, recycling was at the fore. And as you know, somebody growing up here in South Arkansas, which is where I live now, there was actually quite a lot of availability, access to recycling. It was not curbside. You had to take it in, but it was at that time. I don't know what it was like the rest of the country, but it was at that time where you could take your aluminum cans and get cash.
Yeah.
You take your bag of cans and you get cash in hand. And so there's
a great Seinfeld episode about it.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Do you remember this one?
I don't know that I saw that episode. Oh, Kramer, I feel like I've seen every episode, but
Kramer fills up a postal truck. And
oh my God. Yes. Yes. I did see that.
And they drive it to Michigan.
I did see that episode.
Yeah.
Cause he was trying to get more bang for his buck.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Get more money in Michigan than you can in New York.
But driving from, but New York.
You know, I don't think it was fully, vetted out there, but
right.
Yeah, you're right. That was the first time I really started to understand. And actually, because of that, I've had a hard time not crushing my aluminum cans. So I was told by a Murph in, it was a EcoCycle, I think, was like, you probably shouldn't crush the aluminum cans before you recycle them, because they can get missorted if they're crushed too much. I was like, oh, they're like, just put it in regularly. You don't need to crush it. I'm like, interesting. All right. Good to know.
Okay. So well, you know, I get different feedback on that, because some like our local was like, please crush it so we can fit more in the bale.
Yeah, I think the people who want I don't know. I'm not. Yeah. I had no intention of spending this much time talking about aluminum cans. I'm not an aluminum can recycling expert, but really? I was just told crushing the cans is not necessarily helpful in certain municipalities, which is part of the issue that we're dealing with, is where you live really dictates how sustainable you can be when it comes to your consumption and the end of life of your packaging.
Yes, especially with regard to recycling.
Correct.
Which is but one tiny aspect, right? But that's what really started my journey. And then at high school, I helped establish the first environmental club, and it just kind of was a part of who I am. And then when I went to art school at the University of Arkansas, I still had this idea that maybe I would do something in environment, but I was trying to figure out, you know, what was I going to do coming out of school? And that led me into just kind of following the path, which was like advertising agencies and stuff. And then I met who is now my wife. I met my partner at the time, and she was like, I'm moving to New York. You want to come with me? And I'm like, awesome. Let's go.
From Arkansas. You all met in Arkansas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We're actually both from the same hometown. It's a long, fantastic story, a la like When Harry Met Sally kind of story, but I'll spare you. So okay. We can get back to talking about cans.
I'm here for the whole thing. I mean, whatever we're going to follow wherever the conversation takes us. So from the same hometown, you meet.
Yeah.
She gets a job in New York. Y'all move up there.
Yeah, we move up there, and I'm like, okay, now what? And I started freelancing in doing design work. I met somebody that was like, hey, you want to come work full time in packaging? And I was like, what? That's a job? What? And so I was like, why not? Yeah, I need a paycheck. I can barely afford this tiny apartment I'm living in. And from there, I was thrust into this world where I pretty much got the job because I understood printmaking, because that was part of my art degree, traditional printmaking. And it turns out a lot of that technology in Bavarian limestone, for example, or, you know, acid etching copper is actually directly relevant to commercial printmaking, or commercial print, I should say. You know, when you think about linoleum cut, that's a direct analog to flexography, for example. Rotogravure is a method of etching. So there was a lot of transferable knowledge. And I didn't know that. But getting into this world where in packaging, it's wonderful, right? You're dealing with all different kinds of materials, all different kind of processes and everything. So that just kind of rocketed my journey into, ooh, what if we pay attention to sustainability in the packaging space, which, you know, obviously the world's been talking about for a while, but not always.
Correct.
And for me, with my personality, the job I got was the technical end. So I was in production. And over time, I worked my way across various agencies in New York and worked my way up that ladder and eventually became head of that department. But really, I was this bridge between design and manufacturing. That's really what production is. Mm-hmm. And I grew increasingly dissatisfied with just being behind the curtain, like the Wizard and Wizard of Oz. I didn't want to be back there. I wanted to be in front. I wanted to be talking to clients saying, this is what I know about manufacturing. This is how I can help you make better choices before we even start designing. And so over time, and this is when I was at Pearl Fisher, I just worked my way from the back of the room to the front of the room and transformed my role from just being focused on production to also a wider, you know, range of sustainability in making things.
And you also do a fair amount of, I'm sorry, you were continuing.
No. I don't know where I was going. I forgot.
Okay. So you, I know you've also been doing, you know, some more speaking. I think is there a connection to, if I recall, is there a connection to the Die Line Awards? Is that true or no?
So, say again, the Die Line Awards.
Yeah. I feel like there was a connection there with the Die Line Awards, and I've seen you. So, you know, talking about going from sort of, you know, call it like the back of the room to the front of the room, you're definitely out in the industry sharing knowledge and, you know, doing things that I think it's the reason I do it, right? It's, we have to talk about this stuff in public so that people know about it. And I've really appreciated a lot of your content and the things that you've been doing, you know, when you were at Pearl Fisher and also subsequently, and I'd love to get into your, what you're doing as a consultant with Parker Brands as well. So.
Oh yeah. Thanks. Yeah. No, I mean, it's so funny that you say that, because when you go to the front of the room, when you're talking to clients, they're like, hey, would you come talk to, you know, my team? Oh, hey, will you go present the Die Line Awards, which I did with Alex Center, I think it was 2019, mm-hmm. you know, pre-pandemic years. Yeah. And I've been really active with the Die Line since. I've been active with, you know, I do a lot of university talks. I was an adjunct professor for a couple of years at FIT in Manhattan. I was still following this winding road that I've always been following, which, to answer your original question, why am I awesome? I'm just following the path. I'm just going where it seems interesting, you know? And I think, I don't know, I think we should all do that.
I think we're kindred spirits in that. I didn't get into this industry thinking I'll host a podcast and I'll do all these things. And, you know, it's, mm-hmm. I sort of feel like that scene in, is it Batman, or the one with Heath Ledger, where he's the Joker and he says like, everyone has plans. And I'm like, I've just mm-hmm. sort of like, you know, again, like Bruce Lee, like, you know, be like water, right? Like I've just sort of followed where I see things happening and I'm like, is it interesting? Like I gave a few talks on Bitcoin NFCs for a corrugated conference.
Interesting.
And how I thought cryptocurrency and blockchain was going to impact corrugated manufacturers. And I was like, this isn't my jam. I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. And so I pulled back and went somewhere else, you know? So it's kind of like you sort of just, I think it's people who are comfortable with who they are and are willing to go where who they are matches up with what is happening. And you're like, oh, there's value for me here. I'll hang out here. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I felt.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Or, you know, you kind of find a unique space or an angle and you kind of carve out that path, you know, which I think is hard to do early in anybody's career or anybody's winding journey. But I think as you get older and more comfortable with yourself and just more seated in what gets you going, I think it gets easier to find and carve paths rather than just follow them.
That's a great point.
but I just feel like I'm still kind of following, you know. But yeah, I've found a real passion for speaking. I feel like people respond well when I talk, which is amazing, you know, getting that kind of feedback. And it's not unlike the early days when I was in high school, when I was in college, and I was playing in bands. I loved that feedback of the crowd and like playing in shows and playing in places. But speaking is very similar to that. When you're passionate about what you're talking about, people do respond. And that was the hard part about the pandemic, is I was just getting started into this aspect of my career where I was starting to do more speaking engagements. And it was right when most things became virtual. And on one hand, it was more accessible, but on the other hand, it's so much harder to feel the energy of the room. It just is.
I could not agree. If I have an opportunity to go be with somebody in person, mm-hmm. if it's possible. I mean, we have 5 kids in my house, 6 kids really. We have a exchange student who lives with us. Thanks. Yeah, it's. So I want to be there. So it's hard to do both. You know what I'm saying? But if I can, I would much rather be with people. I don't enjoy particularly doing, you know, online webinars where it's like, does anyone have any questions? Raise your hand in the chat. And I'm like, I don't want any more chat. I just want, because you can tell, you can feel the energy. Like it's hard to describe, you know what I mean? But yeah, you can tell if it's like, okay, this isn't landing. I gotta do something else. Or I gave a talk at TLMI, which is the Tag and Label Manufacturers Institute.
Oh, okay.
And it was incredible. There was a ton of energy and you could feel it coming back. And my notes were sort of like thrown out. And I just felt like there was kind of like a mutual vibe going on. Yeah. And it's one of the most existential, like out of body experiences that I think anybody can really feel. Maybe not anybody, but it's an incredible feeling that I wish more people could get. So I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah. And honestly, sustainability has been kind of the vehicle for me to go out and do that. You know, I think a part of what my journey has been so far, which has been, you know, as I said, meandering, is how do I connect to a large amount of people at the same time? Because that feeling is so amazing when it does click. And, you know, it wasn't going to be music necessarily. So this is a way. And I've, you know, adapted over the last few years of how to do it better over virtual, just because that is more practical for me. Unlike you, I only have one kid, and she's almost 2, and I don't know how you do it with 5, but you know, it has rearranged my whole life for the better in terms of my priorities, in terms of you really have to be doing something special for me to want to leave my house and go.
Exactly.
So yeah. But obviously there's immense value in that.
Yeah, totally. Well, let's talk a little bit here as we kind of start wrapping up. I had a feeling like Brandy and I are going to talk for a long time.
It's easy.
And for sure, we could probably go for hours. We could go full. I don't know, who are these long form interviewers? Lex Friedman is one who just interviews everyone. Have you ever heard his podcast?
I haven't actually. I don't know who that is.
He interviews. When I say everybody, I mean everybody. It's a fat, they're like 3 hours long. It's crazy.
How, wow. Two That's a commitment.
It is. But you're just like, he has the most fascinating guests on. So anyway, clearly I'm not paid to promote the Lex Friedman podcast. But I learned early on that talking for multiple hours about packaging, you lose people pretty quickly.
Sure. So, yeah. It's not a passion point for everyone.
Definitely not. But let's talk about, so you've obviously left New York and you're back. Is it in your hometown or near?
Yeah.
Your hometown?
So I'm back in my hometown. I'm here to be close to my family, and my wife is also from here. So we're close to her family, which has been marvelous. We came down here. Sorry.
With a 2-year-old is huge to have family close by.
Yeah. It's awesome. And, because both of us spent the last 17 years in New York being pretty homesick. So we're back. And so I found it as an opportunity to start my own business. So you mentioned at the beginning, Parker Brands. So yeah, I've been going at just about a year. I just celebrated my year anniversary on March 1st. So yay.
Congrats.
Thank you. And so I went through a bunch of stuff before I joined the podcast because I knew we wanted to talk about this. And I just got some like data points I thought I would just kind of spit
out. Let's do it. Let's nerd out for a second.
Okay. So over this year, I've had 2 features in design magazines. I've been on 3 podcasts. I've done 3 conference talks. I've done 4 university talks. I've judged 2 awards and I've gotten 13 clients.
That's incredible.
And I was just like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Amazing.
Numbers. Yeah.
I love everything about that. I got to imagine there's a little bit of fear mixed with a healthy dose of confidence when you're like, I think I can do this on my own.
Oh God, it's so much fear. Much fear, man. I mean, I have spent my entire life not being an independent business person, even though it runs in my blood. Entrepreneurship is a part of my family. But it was something that I was just scared to do. I was always working for someone else. And I just got to the point where I was like, you know what, if I'm going to do it, I should do it now while my kid is young and while we're, you know, just building our life again here in Arkansas. And yeah, it's going great. It's got its ups and downs. There are times where I'm like, why am I doing this? Why did I do this? This is so hard, you know, because what you don't necessarily think about, or at least I didn't, is all the intricate details of what it means to be your own boss, which is you find the business, you work on the business, you deliver the business, you chase up the money after the business is done, you do all of it. And of course, I knew that, but actually doing it, it's like, oh man, this is a lot.
It is.
But I'm also really lucky in that over my time working in New York, I made some amazing contacts and I work only with the companies and the brands that I want to work with. Mm. And they're all great people. And so like they make a lot of those other steps really easy. But it's still a lot. And of course, you know, I have the family, you know, that's riding on it. And,
right.
So there's pressure there, but it's all good. I mean, it's forced me to try things I've never tried before, you know, deliver kinds of things that I've never done before. I'm doing so much more writing now, which is great because I get a lot of exercise in doing that, something that I've always been self-conscious about. So it's pushed me to expand my skills, which is what fear is good for.
Right.
You know, when you're doing it right, you go into it with the fear and then you do it anyway, and it powers you through some of these things that you may not have tried otherwise because you were too comfortable or whatever your situation. So those have all been really good things. But yes, a healthy dose of fear and confidence that has built over time, that I know that people are interested in what I have to say, and I know that oftentimes I have an interesting perspective to people. So it's, you know, I get that reinforced. And so that helps a lot.
What is it then? This will kind of, we'll maybe wrap it up with this question. I might have a follow-up after. So you have 13 new clients you mentioned in this first year. There was a 13. Is that the number?
Yeah, 13. Lucky 13.
Okay. That's a great number. So you have 13 new clients. What is it that you are doing with Parker Brands that made somebody say, you know what, we need to contact Brandy and Brandy is going to help us out with, like, what are sort of the things that you are delivering and what types of customers or market segments or industry segments, you know, who are the people, like, when they reach out to me, I'm like, I can help you out right away. Or
absolutely.
Pretty good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's still the core of where I started, which is being this bridge between design and manufacturing. It's just in the broader sense of sustainability. So an agency might come to me and say, hey, we have this brief come in. We don't have the technical expertise. Can you help us, you know, source new vendors? Can you help us look at their supply chain and optimize it? Can you look at an innovative material we could apply to this packaging that makes sense from an LCA perspective. Or I might be working with a big organization, like the SPC is one that I work with a lot. I'm leading a collaborative there, the design collaborative. Mm. And so in that work, I'm consulting a large group of membership on one of our work streams is refreshing the how to recycle label. So it's very much looking at certainly design, but systems design, like how do we also talk to consumers better? How do we inform people better? So I'm, again, that kind of bridge. I speak engineering, but I also speak designer. So this unique space that I inhabit allows me to do kind of a lot of different kinds of work. So I'm doing material strategies for people. I'm doing sustainability strategies. So something that a lot of companies are interested in right now is what kind of claims can we make
right.
based on the initiatives we're already doing? What are some incremental moves we can make to make better claims without greenwashing? Those are some of my hardest projects, but also the most fulfilling because those are kind of on the edge of things that I'm good at, which is writing and evaluating reports and transforming them into language that consumers can use and understand. So, you know, instead of just recycle this box or this box is 100% recyclable, valid claims, maybe there's something more in depth from the brand story. Maybe there's some more infusion of that brand personality that I can help apply to that language that keeps us within the boundaries of not greenwashing, for example. So I have extremely technical projects where I'm looking at materials and speccing new materials for people. But then I have very marketing heavy branded projects where I'm really just crafting from my technical expertise how to speak to consumers. So you can kind of see where, yeah, just having this ability to go, okay, I see your carbon footprint, let's convert that into language we can use, starts to become actually pretty valuable. Mm. So yeah, I'm doing honestly a range of projects that I did not necessarily anticipate, but that I am extremely, like, I'm having so much fun doing it. It's just amazing. And I feel like not a lot of people are offering this specific set of skills.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a unique and necessary skill set. So, you know, kind of going back to your idea of, like, you know, flowing water and then carving out your own spot, it's when you follow what you're passionate about, and then maybe you even come up against something that's like, there's really nobody doing this, why not me? And then you start to carve out your own area in a yeah. place where people already are. So is it, you mentioned agencies, do mm-hmm. CPG companies reach out to you? Do you yes. have, you know, do companies even, I'm thinking like a company like Myers might, as a manufacturer might say, hey, Brandy, we need some help. Maybe correctly marketing our materials yeah. to, that would be another.
Yeah, I've been working with some suppliers. So yeah, revamping how they talk about themselves, especially in the sustainability space. Yeah, so CPG brands, agencies, suppliers, manufacturers, and NGOs and other large organizations.
Hey, like associations like SPC. Are you going to be in New Orleans?
I am.
Okay, I'm not, sadly, but Corey Connors will be there. You should.
Yeah. Yeah. I connected with Corey. So, I'm looking forward to seeing him there, and, yeah, it should be a good crowd. And New Orleans is always really fun. So,
yeah. And I just realized that we have timestamped this podcast. And so I better get this out prior to SPC. Totally fine. This is why I switched this new format where I can kind of, live produce it. So that's cool. On that note, Brandy, how do people reach out, get in touch with you? I know you're active and busy on LinkedIn. Do you have a website? Tell us all the things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks again for having me on. So people can reach out to me. Certainly LinkedIn is a great place. I'm very active there. My website is parkerbrands.eco. So you can see me there. You can also reach out directly to me, brandy@parkerbrands.eco. So, yeah.
B-R-A-N-D-I.
That's right. Brandy with an I.
Brandy with an I at parkerbrands.eco.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Brandy, I really appreciate it. I've been following your work for a number of years now. Ted was able to interview you first, but I am super glad that I have now 250 episodes under my belt. And it was,
that's amazing, man.
It was just for this moment. I believe that we were brought together for finally at the right time, at the right moment. So thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, make sure to connect up with Brandy. Brandy is the founder and consultant at Parker Brands. Appreciate you all listening and tuning in. And I'm sure we'll be back with another episode of the People of Packaging podcast.
Amazing.
Well, that is a wrap for the People of Packaging podcast. Hey, if you want some more packaging content, you can go pick up the book my wife and I wrote, Packaging Peaks in the Sticky Situation, available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all sorts of places. And also, I want for you to go and follow my friends, Corey Connors. He hosts Sustainable Packaging with Corey Connors. It is incredible and it is wonderful. You can also go check out Avelio Matos's podcast, Packaging Unboxed. And you can check out the three of us every single Monday morning, 8:30 Mountain Time on LinkedIn, where we host the Packaging Today Show. It is hilarious, and packaging is only half the story. So go check it out.